What's up, and welcome to the Dynasty Happy Hour with your hosts, Doug Eddy, Tim Keller, and Tyler Gunther. Bring us all inside the huddle. Whether it's in-season or off-season, this is your spot for the best and in-depth Dynasty Fantasy football advice. So let's not waste any more time and get right to it with Doug, Tim, and Tyler with another Dynasty Happy Hour.
Welcome back in. It is the Dynasty Happy Hour. I'm your host, Doug Eddy. I am here with my co-host, Tim Keller. Tyler Gunther is off this week, possibly to return next week. His status is kind of up in the air. We don't know. He's being penalized for some dad jokes that went down last week. So we haven't decided if we're going to bring him back just yet. But what we've done, we brought on a special guest, my brother-in-law, my co-host of the Trophy Time podcast, Mr. Joshua Trotta is in the house. Josh, how are you this evening?
I am happy to be back on the Dynasty Happy Hour podcast.
And it is very nice and gracious of you to come on and join us this week. We've got an awesome podcast lined up for everyone. So what we are going to do is we are going to talk a little startup strategy. So this is the time of the year, if you will. I'm slipping over my words. I'm so eloquent tonight. So this is the time of the year where a lot of leagues will start to have their startups. So maybe you got some friends that are putting together a league. You just joined on myfantasyleague.com, which is the best option, in my opinion, for your dynasty leagues. So make sure you check that out. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. We're going to talk startup strategy. We're going to talk about, you know, our each individual strategies that we try to go into each league and we try to follow. We all know that things can change, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. We're going to touch upon, you know, trading back, trading up. We're going to touch a little bit on auction strategy. And then Josh is really going to lead the discussion on the redraft plus dynasty mindset. So a lot of people out there that play dynasty also play redraft. Trophy Time is a predominantly redraft podcast that Josh and I do. And we play both dynasty and redraft pretty equally from the amount of leagues that we play. So Josh is going to talk about how do you have a successful mindset in dynasty and redraft at the same time? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of podcasts out there, but I never really see anybody broach this subject very often. And I think it's an intriguing one because there is two very different sets, thought processes that go on here. And to have both of them go on at the same time, it can be a little tricky. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. Tim, you're nodding your head over there. I forgot to ask, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fantastic, Doug. It's great to be here. You know, we're gonna miss a couple of those dad jokes, but I think we're going to make it through. Josh is joining us. And like you said, this is a topic that I guarantee you, most of these people that are doing these dynasty podcasts also play in redraft, and nobody's really talking about that mindset that you go from your rookie drafts to your startups to another month or two down the line, and everybody's doing those redraft drafts and the different type of mind frame you need to be in for each and every one of those.
Yeah, I've already seen people doing mock drafts. I know Yahoo did their industry mock draft. I've seen an ESPN one. You'll start to see stuff like the Fantasy Pros app, which is actually really great. If you just want to sit down and bang out a mock draft real quick, it's a really, really easy exercise to do. And practice makes perfect. Practice makes better. It doesn't make perfect because there is no perfect draft unless you're Chris Perfetti in one of the leagues that Josh and I are in, where he had an absolutely stacked team and lucked his way into it. But that's a whole nother story, right, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely. He completely closed his eyes on that one. It's just because the Vikings were good this year, and he's pretty much a homer for the Vikings and just picked every Viking that is usable in fantasy football.
So, yeah, and we all have those guys in those types of redraft leagues, because let's be honest, redraft is more for the casual fan. I think dynasty's for your hardcores. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about the bridge that crosses the two. So let's jump into the conversation. I want to talk startup strategy first. So Tim, we'll go a little bit of a round robin here. So Tim, what is your mindset when you go into a dynasty startup? Are you win now? Are you build for the future? Are you just kind of go with the flow? Walk me through your personal process when it comes to a dynasty startup.
I've played multiple different strategies in startups. I've played the win now. I've played the what most people term the productive struggle. You know, kind of not necessarily pump one, you know, year one, but you're more willing to trade back, acquire assets for the future. If you take a little bit of a hit year one, it's not the biggest concern to you. And then there's plenty of times where I go into a draft saying, you know, I the way this draft has started, I think I can go with a win now mentality and try to take this out year one, maybe even year two, and then we'll switch gears from there. And really, it's all about where you're at in the draft and how the draft starts. Kind of read you know, read the table. Read what the other players are doing. If everybody's going to go one way, there's no problem zigging when everybody else is zagging. So I kind of just like to sit back. I don't go into a draft with any sort of in stone, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'll let the draft come to me a bit, see what everybody else is doing, and I'll try to make my move when I think it's possible.
Yeah, and I think that's a key thing to remind everyone is that don't be so rigid upon one strategy. Mm-hmm. So if you say, hey, I'm going to go into this draft with a zero RB strategy, and then all of a sudden, like, a running back that you didn't think was going to drop to you drops to you, and the value's there, like, don't be like, well, I went in and I have to go zero RB. Don't be foolish. Go with, you know, the best player on the board versus maybe a wide receiver that's available, and go in that direction. I think a lot of the mistakes that people make is they get in that mindset and they're just dead set on doing it one certain way. And you have to be flexible because things are going to happen in a draft early on, especially where, you know, you might not have anticipated it. And you want to take advantage of the kind of value that might present itself in those situations. And that tends to happen a lot in like Superflex formats, for instance. So, you know, maybe you're in a Superflex league and you're thinking, all right, I'm going to take my QBs. I'm drafting 12th and I'm going to take my QBs on the 12th and 13th pick turn. And just get them out of the way. And that can work for some people. But maybe there's, you know, maybe there isn't a quarterback that's gone in those first picks. And you're like, well, you know what? Maybe I can wait a little bit. So there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. So my takeaway from what you said is be flexible and try to work your way to the draft that's best going to benefit your team. So go ahead.
You brought something up, though, is best player available. If you're in a draft and maybe, you know, we'll say we're in the sixth round of a draft and you're kind of in a spot where I don't really love any of these guys. You can attempt to trade back, get to that next tier where you see a little more value in the next group of players. But then again, you're not always going to find a trade partner. If you can't, take best player available, because even if you don't like that player, if they truly are the best player available, someone there's going to be like somebody in this league that does value that player. And later on, you will be able to move that player for value.
Yeah, and that's a strategy that I know that Josh has used in the past of like, hey, I'm going to take this player. I might not like him, but, you know, someone's going to have a team need at some point. And mm-hmm. if I have, like, you know, a running back that's a glaring value, and maybe you already have some running backs, Josh is all about taking that asset and flipping it for either something that he needs for his team or maybe getting some future picks. So, Josh, typically when you go into a dynasty draft, you know, what are you thinking? So Tim explained his direction. I want to know yours because you kind of lean 50-50 with dynasty leagues versus redrafts. So I'm interested to hear your take on your dynasty startup strategy.
Well, I think both of you guys highlighted a lot of things that I do as well. So I think, Tim, you hit it right on the head with understanding where you are within the draft. So I think that first and foremost, knowing my position within the draft is going to help angle me and where I'm going to go. Whether it's player specific, whether it's best player available, whether it's trading. I also think that based on how my draft set is going, I'm going to evaluate kind of like what you said, Tim, too, is like based on how the draft is unfolded for me in the first five rounds is a good indicator for me. I want to know how am I doing in the first five rounds, getting either best player available or getting players that I target high value based on the scoring system of the league that I'm entering, and then say, okay, do I have a team based on what I've actually been able to get in five rounds that looks like a compete against everybody else's draft in the first five rounds? And if I think I do, then I'm going to go hard at trying to build a win now squad and be a little bit more aggressive within my picks. I know from a strategic standpoint, I do go in with a certain mindset of the kind of players that I'm looking for. Obviously, in PPR leagues, I want running backs that are reception hogs. I want those satellite plus backs. I want to collect as many of them as I can throughout the top half of the draft, so that way I have as much draft capital. They basically earn their weight in gold when it comes to trading, so I know that I'll have a lot better trade options and I'll have a lot more control. I think for me in Dynasty, the thing that I've learned the most is that you need to be the clear-cut control of every trade that you try to make, because you're playing against very smart people. Like you said, Doug, Dynasty's for the hardcore fantasy owners and for the fantasy players. And if you go in ever in a weak position for a player based on your glaring need, they know it. And they're going to use it to their advantage like they should. And I've used it to my advantage in many situations because that's what you're supposed to be doing. You have to analyze the situation in which you're being faced with, and you always want to make sure that you're the one that has the power within that trade conversation so you can dictate terms and get what you're looking for. because you never want to be in the other position there. So that's why I think that running backs in Dynasty hold a very special place for that sheer fact, but never would say that I would go over a mid-tier running back over a top-tier wide receiver, because I understand that the return on that investment is going to be great for my team in general from a head-to-head matchup standpoint, and is going to present value for a team that maybe values wide receivers and young wide receivers more so than I do, where I think, hey, I can get another young wide receiver in this upcoming draft that we're going to be doing next year, or I can trade for an upcoming wide receiver just because I know how many of them don't hit year over year, and people are going to lose interest in trying to hold on to them. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at, not only during the draft, but kind of as we're getting towards the end of the draft of, what have I acquired? What kind of assets do I have? And then where can I start to target players that I might have missed out on?
Yeah, and I think you brought up a really good point. So kind of checking in on your team once you make your fifth pick and seeing what you have. And a best practice for me is actually looking at the other teams in your league. So how often when you do a draft are you only focusing on your team? I think most people predominantly just focus on who they've drafted, but they don't look around at the league and see who everyone else has drafted. So say you're five rounds in and you're like, all right, I'm in a good spot. I want to win now. We all know that players like Larry Fitzgerald, the older players that if you're in a win now, maybe it's a Jordy Nelson in round 13. You're going to be able to get extreme value because let's be honest. I mean, Dynasty is an age factor when people draft. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, well, this guy's 21. You know, Sony Michel's 21 versus this other running back is 23. So therefore, he's more valuable. Okay, that's fine if you want to look at it that way. But if you're trying to build a win now, take advantage of the older players that are still productive, because they're going to give you a massive amount of – you know Larry Fitzgerald's going to catch 100 passes. It's going to happen. He's not going to miss a game. He's going to catch 100 passes, and life will go on. I want that guy in the late single-digit rounds, and that's where he goes, if not past pick 100. I think managers are getting smarter, and actually his value is going up in Dynasty because you start to see people pivot to that win now. But checking in on your team and checking the rest of the league, and that can also be handy too, especially if you're in a super flex league. So Tim, Tyler, and I did a super flex startup, and we drafted a ton of quarterbacks because we looked around the league. It's a 14-team league, and we have four really solid options at quarterback. So we have Matt Ryan, we have Carson Wentz, we have Josh Rosen, and Mitchell Trubisky, I think?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and Luke Falk, which we thought we could flip, but whatever. That's a shout-out to you, Tyler. So we looked around the league and said, you know what? If one of these guys goes down with an injury, we know that the most valuable asset in Superflex leagues is a starting quarterback. You can get anything for a starting quarterback in these leagues because, you know, looking around, there's only 32 of them that start in the league. In a 14-team league, if you don't have three decent ones, like, you're toast. So we know that, hey, maybe we need a running back. Someone has an injury or an underperforming player. The rest of their teams win now. Boom. We can flip one of those quarterbacks for, you know, a potential really nice running back piece that fits our team a little bit better. But hey, we'll hold tight for now. So looking at the board and looking at the rest of the teams, I think is an underrated strategy because I don't think enough people do it. I know I've been guilty of it, is looking at my roster but not paying attention to what's going on around me. And you have to see the big picture. If you want to compete, especially in year one, you need to see what everyone else is doing and put together a team. If you see a team that you like and like, wow, they're really good, your goal should be to put a team together that's better than
better.
That.
Yep.
So that's what I'll say. If you're win now, if you're pushing it down the road, then you know what? Trading back, picking up picks, if that's how you want to play it, that's cool too. I know a lot of people will try to target all those younger players and actually give them more draft capital because they're younger. So like a Chris Godwin typically goes many rounds before Larry Fitzgerald does, right? Because, you know, Godwin is an ascending player and Fitzgerald is, you know, maybe in the last year of his deal. So, but if they want to push it down the road, you can do that too. And that's one of the things that it makes Dynasty so interesting, because when we talk about redraft a little bit later, you're just playing in win now. Like, there is no down the road. You're playing to win now. So it's very interesting how those kind of strategies merge. So I did want to talk a little. Do you want to go, Josh? Go ahead.
I just had one thing. I think that one of the things and strategies that people need to be utilizing is not only just looking at the big board, but if you're in a startup redraft, or not a redraft, but just a startup league, you need to learn the tendencies of the owners around you quickly. Mm-hmm. And you need to start to understand kind of where they're drafting, especially if there's somebody that in the first 2 to 3 rounds is drafting players that you are targeting and they're getting them one or two picks prior, and you know where your advantages lie, right? So we always, you're going to be in a snake draft, and you're going to have opportunities to always have an advantage on the players that are, on the owners that are taking players that you want. You need to pick up on that really quickly, because you need to know when are you going to have an advantage to be able to get the guys that you want, knowing they're not going to come back to you like they usually would or had been in mock drafts that you were doing as you're preparing. So you need to quickly be able to pivot if you start to see owners are attacking players that you want, and need to start to understand where you gain an advantage and leverage on them so you can start getting those assets on your team and basically doing what they're doing to you. And trying to make sure that they then pivot and try to change their strategy, because that's when you know you're really that's when you're going to be the most effective, is if you can start to learn those tendencies and kind of what they're looking to do and plan ahead and be able to either plan for them grabbing a player that you want and having two on the board at all times, or be able to know you need to grab your player around early. And that's a strategy that you have to take, even if it doesn't make sense to the other owners. But if you want a guy, you might have to take him around earlier knowing he's not going to come back to me based on the strategies of these other owners.
And also an underrated thing too is if you're in a league with a bunch of analysts, like, you know, we typically are, is write down some notes, go through their tweets and see who they're pumping up. You know, see if like, hey, this guy's a big, so people know me, like I like Kalen Ballage, I like Aaron Jones, I'm a Jameis Winston guy. Like, I'm pretty transparent with who I like from a value standpoint. So if someone sees me on the board and they're thinking Aaron Jones, they know damn well that he's not getting past me at that particular point in a draft. So if you have the time to go through their Twitter handles and see who they're pumping up, everybody's got their guy. We see it every single day in our feed as we scroll through Twitter. They're like, oh, there's this guy going on Chase Edmonds again, or this guy, you know, Lamar Miller's been a hot one this week because of his, you know, his value has been pumped up this week. So and there is like a flavor of the week on Twitter every week. There's players that rise and fall. Chris Godwin was one. So if you start seeing people talk about that or follow who Evan Silva's tweeting about, like, for instance, a great resource. If you see someone pop up and Evan Silva starts tweeting about them, their value is going to go up. Yeah. I mean, that's just, it is what it is. Matt Harmon with a receiver. We saw it with Tyler Lockett. We saw it with Allen Robinson. We've seen it with, you know, Deshaun Hamilton's one of his guys this year. So if you start to see that, those trends, you know, write these things down. And I will give you one of the best pieces of advice that I ever read was Leo Pasiga, Siga FF on Twitter. It keeps a notebook in all his leagues, and he writes down the tendencies of every manager in that league. He writes down the trades that they've made. He writes down, like, all right, this guy.
Offers that didn't get worked out.
Yep. He likes to write down, like, this guy likes to trade for future picks. This guy likes to trade up. This guy likes to trade back. So then if he's in a situation, he can look and say, all right, my boy Josh over here likes to trade back. I'm a couple picks behind him and I want to move up. I know that he might be more prone to do that, and it might not cost me as much because that's his preference. Mm-hmm. So these are the kind of advantages, you know, in a startup, you know, it's a little bit different, but once you get past a startup and you're in for the long haul, these are some of the advantages that you need to take over the other owners, because when you have more pieces to the puzzle that you can put together, the better off you're going to be. And I will say that, you know, it does take some time. And if you're just getting into Dynasty, be prepared, because it is time consuming. It's not redraft where you're sitting on the throne on a Thursday morning. You got Thursday night football and you're like, ah, I should probably check my lineup this week. You know, it's none of that. Like in Dynasty, we're always, always scrolling through Twitter, finding, you know, reading articles. It is for the hardcore. So there is going to be some time consuming point to it. I mean, it consumes a lot of my time and I don't make any money doing it. So yeah, it's something that we love and everyone else loves too. So I just wanted to bring that up as know your opponent. Like Josh said, write things down. I'm a huge proponent of writing things down. I write down all of the stuff for the shows. I write down my rosters in leagues. I write down my targets in leagues. Like, I like to physically write things down because I retain the information. Like if you ask me, like, hey, what's this guy's contract in this league? I'm going to know it off the top of my head because I've written it down. You know, so that's something that I enjoy doing.
I'd have to boot up my laptop and pull up my Excel spreadsheet.
It's right here, buddy.
See, I wanted to kind of hit on a little something both you guys were just kind of talking about, is if you get into a league and let's say you wanted to start a dynasty league with all your buddies, if you can get, you know, 9 to 11 other good buddies of yours that you know are going to be dedicated, and you know you can get this league off the ground and get it going for a couple years. Like my league of record, my home league has been going for 14 years now. Nice. I can almost literally mock every year's first round because I know how everybody in this league thinks and plays, and just looking at the rosters, like, I know what he's going to go for. I know what he's going to go for. And you can sit down and I can one man mock the first round. So if I have certain targets or, you know, a certain guy I want, I can maneuver my way around and get those guys because I have a really strong feeling of how these guys are going. Now, Josh was saying, you know, you got to try to figure this out. And I really like that round five. Go scope out the big board. And that's not something just for Dynasty. If you're playing redraft, especially too, and like Doug said, that is always win now. Go check out what other people
draft.
Yeah, go check out what other people are drafting. If Josh is a pick in front of me, and I see that he's only got one RB, and we're in the sixth round, I'm probably guessing he's got an RB loaded and locked, ready to pick. So if I want to do something, I probably got to figure that Josh is going to take that RB. I got to try to angle and get another strategy going.
Yeah, and that's one of the big differentiators, too, between Dynasty and Redraft. So Dynasty, there's usually a lot of trades. You know, trades up, trades down, trades all over the place during a startup. In Redraft, you barely ever see it. I mean, I was in Josh's home league a couple years ago, and I made a trade in draft, and everyone was, like, freaking out, like, well, you can't do that. What is going on? And I traded like, a couple rounds worth of picks, and I got Josh Gordon back, which was...
It was an epic trade.
Yeah, I actually ended up trading. The guy that I traded the pick with took LeGarrette Blount, who scored the 17 touchdowns, and I ended up getting Josh Gordon. So it didn't work out for me at the time, but everyone saw Josh Gordon as a value. So everyone was like freaking out that I made this trade live. I mean, we're in person, live in the draft, and there was like all sorts of hubbub. The guy that I sniped him on was like, you can't do that. And we're like, yeah, we actually
It was awesome, actually. It was phenomenal. Pretty, I got my popcorn ready. I just sat there in the corner. That would be the Granite State of Mind fantasy football league that you'd be referencing to. The same fantasy league that is in Matthew Berry's most recent 2018 calendar for our loser punishment. We are world famous here. Wrote Matthew Berry a beautiful email, and he ended up putting us in the calendar. So if you do own the Matthew Berry calendar, make sure you go do, I think it's like November 10th. I think it's November 10th, 11th, but it's right around there. And you'll see our buddy Chris Diesel gracing the corner of South Willow Street here in Manchester, New Hampshire, in a beautiful, beautiful sundress that my wife owns.
it was quite beautiful. But, you know, that's one of the differences, too, is that, you know, with redraft, you're not really trading unless you're creative in the draft. And I think, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about redraft later and Josh can speak to it. But I just wanted to chime in because that is one of the big differences as well. So one thing I want to talk about from a strategic standpoint. I feel that when a lot of these dynasty startup drafts happen, that a lot of people are using like a DLF top 200 or, you know, whatever website they prefer. Hey, maybe they're on Dynasty Happy Hour checking out our rankings. Hey, who knows? They look at mine and go, Julio Jones at 19? What is he on? And I'm like, yeah, come at me, bro. But anyway, so I want to ask you, Tim, do you typically go into a draft with your own set of rankings that you've done? And do you do like a top 150 or do you do players by tiers?
I do a little bit of both.
Okay.
For years, before ever being on a podcast, before ever being associated with any website, I would show up to a rookie draft that would only be, you know, four rounds long, and I would have 125 players listed out. And people are like, what's that for? Okay, well, it gets to the late fourth round. I don't like any of these guys. I'm going to take a name off this list nobody else here has ever heard of and blah, blah, blah. But no, I like to come in with my own set list of players, or in this case, nowadays, I can just go to my ranks on dynastyhappyhour.com.
Shameless plug.
And then I go off of that, but I also have built-in tiers, again, up here in my head, where if we're coming up, and I think there's going to be a tier break about two picks before I'm coming up and I really want to get somebody from that tier that's about to break, I can go ahead and know I'll move up three or four spots, jump into that tier I want to get a player from. It's not going to cost me a ton. And I feel good about that pick, where if I let that slide by, two or three picks go, that tier ends. And all of a sudden I'm looking at this third tier of guys and it's just, I don't like any of these guys.
Yeah. It's a different type of tiers at that point.
Yeah. You got to come into that. And Doug, you and I seem to agree a lot on a lot of players, but
yes, we do.
But you have to come in because the way I feel about somebody isn't going to be the way Josh feels about somebody or Tyler feels about somebody or anybody else that could be in this league. So I want to come in and I want to know that, you know, I have Nick Chubb as my RB, you know, my 103. I want to come in. That's my guy. And if all of a sudden Nick Chubb were at the 7th, 8th pick and Nick Chubb's still, you know, floating around out there. Okay, now I'm going to go make a move. I'm going to make a move and I'm going to get my third guy. He's my third guy. He might not be yours. He might not be Josh's, but he's mine. And I'm going to make a move based off of how I see that player.
Yeah, I think that's a good strategy. Josh, you know, I'll ask the same question to Tim. So do you do your own ranks or do you just kind of do it like based on ADP and my fantasy league? Or what's your strategy when you're going through a startup draft?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for... there's a big difference between redraft and dynasty for me when I'm going in and I'm looking at players and trying to evaluate who I want to go after. So for a redraft standpoint, I don't make lists. I don't have a top 250. I don't bring that with me. Just for the sheer fact that I pretty much have a good understanding as the time during my research time, which starts in July for redraft and all the way through to the end of August when we do our drafts, when we have about 5 or 6 drafts in a row. That I know pretty consensusly what guys I want, and I know I'm not going to get all of them, but I know exactly the rounds in which I want to try to grab them based on my mocks that I've been doing, and I have a good feel for if player A is taken, who could be a replacement player that could give similar level statistical
production
for me. And so I pretty much just kind of go in with that mindset already knowing that, okay, these are the players that I'm targeting throughout without needing to write them down. And I just kind of go with the flow organically for how the draft is going and be able to work myself in and out of that. And like you said, there's not a lot of trading that's going on. So I'm just reading the board and reacting. For Dynasty, completely different story. I'm doing research 365 days a year. I have a spreadsheet on Google Sheets that I have that I've been going through for the last 4 years of a Dynasty League that Doug and I are in. And I update that thing every single rookie period, and then I go through and I take all of the players that are coming up for free agency. They're going to be a part of our auction draft, and I actually tier all of those players and color code them with a ledger of exactly which players I'm targeting and the values in which I'm going to maximize, because it's a salary league. So I actually have values, and those values are actually the cap in which I'm going to pay for them. So that is the optimal. That's as high as I am willing to pay for a player. Anything below that, I'm going after that player 100%. And it's all color coded. And so that way it's quickly for me to be able to reference. So I have an overall, and then I break it down by every single positional player, including all the defensive positional players. And I utilize that to basically have a great understanding of all the players that are available, which players are the heaviest of need across the other rosters. So I'll write down how many are at each roster. So if it's a linebacker, for instance, how many linebackers are on every single team that's in the Dynasty League? So I know which teams are probably going to be targeting multiple linebackers compared to teams that are only going to be targeting one linebacker. And that's how I'm strategically approaching my Dynasty Leagues, and I'm going into those leagues going, these are the way that this is how I want to structure my team, and these are the players that are available, and these are the tiers based on a color coding system that I have. And then again, if it's a salary league, these are the maximum I'm willing to spend for those. But I'll use all the outlets out there, from Fantasy Football Calculator to Fantasy Pros to ESPN to Evan Silva to everybody, to just, I want to know what everybody's ranking players as. It's not because I want that to be my Bible for what I'm going into a draft with, but I want it to keep me sane. I think that's the biggest thing, is I don't want to start to go off on my own and start to be so into a player that I'm so far off consensus that I need to start to take a step back and go, okay, am I missing something? Like, why am I 5 rounds further ahead than everybody else? Or why am I 5 rounds further behind than everybody else? I think that's what I use those rankings for. So just give me a sanity check and make sure that I'm in line with some of the best minds in fantasy and not just completely falling in love with a player just because I liked one game they played or I liked the school that they went to. Go Noles. You know, something like that. You know, I need to make sure. You know, Dalvin Cook was a prime example, right? I had the 1-2 in a dynasty rookie draft, and I am as big of a Florida State fan as you're ever going to find outside of Doug. And his athletic profile was putrid. But I watched every single game of his entire career, and I couldn't pass up the opportunity to draft him. And it was, I pretty much went with my heart over my brain on that one, but Christian McCaffrey was probably the better pick. You know, he had a better athletic profile. He was just as statistically dominant in college, but I went with my heart. And that's a tough one, right? That's tough when you start to look at it that way. But I watched every game Dalvin Cook ever played. I didn't get to watch every game Christian McCaffrey ever played. And I knew Dalvin Cook played football a lot better than what the athletic profile showed. So those are the toughest moments, is when you're drafting with your heart over your brain. Those get really difficult.
And that can either be a huge boom or it can bust. I mean, I drafted Samaje Perine at the 1-9 in that league that you drafted Dalvin Cook at the 1-2, and I missed out on Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt. It happens, but I liked Perine. I liked the situation. You know what? You're going to win some. You're going to lose some. So before I lose my train of thought here, another good parallel between Dynasty and Redraft that I kind of put together as you were talking, Josh, is that if you play Dynasty, it is year round. And by the time that redraft season comes, like you said, in July, you start to hit your drafts in August or early September, right before the season starts. I always make the joke, I feel like Neo in the Matrix in redraft season, because I've done all this research all year long on all these players. So I make my own set of rankings for redraft, which I stick to, but I know them pretty much in my head. I write them down because I write everything down. But at that point, if you play dynasty football and you're in, you know, a league, five leagues, 10 leagues, and you get to redraft season, it almost feels easy at that point because you've been doing it all year long. So I think that's one of the advantages that you have. And we'll talk a little bit more about it later, by playing dynasty all year, is that redraft, I think, becomes easier for you. So I do want to touch on one other strategy, and it's for a different format. And this one's near and dear to my heart because it made me lose years off my life recently. So that is the auction strategy. So Josh and I are in an auction league. You know, it's $115 million cap. There's contract years involved. It's IDP. There's a lot of moving parts. So it's very much like an NFL commissioner type of league, which I know isn't the norm. It's a unique type of league. Tim and I are in the open bar tab league. Mm-hmm. And we recently had our rookie auction, which is a non-proxy bid. So you bid, the clock gets reset for 14 hours. I bid $1, it gets reset. I bid $1, someone else bids $1, it gets reset. Constantly going all the time. So the auction that Josh and I are in is not non-proxy. It's actually in person. So, you know, I go to that draft with all of my non-Excel spreadsheets with a lot of the similar information that Josh has, like what's my price limit on a certain player that's available and what am I going to push it to? And that's kind of how I go in that. And I think Josh mentioned how he does that, something similar. So the auction strategy I want to talk about is, you know, it drives me crazy. I'd call it cutthroat. And the cutthroat strategy in these non-proxy auctions of waiting until the last minute to bid up a player by $1 just to reset the clock to get value on other players is, I know it's part of a strategy and there are different strategies, but it infuriates me. And they're like, well, pay up for your player. No one gets a bargain. Like, hey, this guy's on the board. Sony Michel's $250. You can't let him go for that. This is the stuff we see in the chat. It's like, you know, you get certain people, they gang up and they try to inflate the prices on everyone. And to me, that drives me crazy. Tim, do you want to speak on that a little bit?
That's what I was going to say. It's, I've done it to others before where I'm like, that's a great deal he's about to get. I'll just put an extra $1 on top of this. And if he wants him, he's got to come back and get him.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when the shoe's on the other foot and you're like, okay, I'm 3 hours away from getting this guy what I feel is
I'm 10 minutes
of value. Yeah. It's in the red now.
I'm less than a minute on the clock. And I'm like, I'm going to get him. Refresh.
And you look in the Voxer chat and somebody's in there just like, are they really just going to let you walk away with that? And
yeah, these sure guys enough, literally bam. Screenshot the play. It's like Lamar Jackson, $250. This is too cheap, and put it in there. And I'm the high bidder on Lamar Jackson because I was 98% of the time. And then eventually he hit a price that I was like, you know what?
It's not worth it, right?
I'll let someone else get him. I'll take my $500-something to next year's auction, and I'm going to sit on a stack of cash, and then I will control the auction because I will have the most money.
see, with this league, with all the rollover, and you get your stipends throughout the year. So if you just decide to sit on your wallet for a little while, you can really you move a couple pieces for extra dollars off of somebody else, you know, out of somebody else's wallet, and all of a sudden you are in a power position. So going into this draft, I was kind of in the middle of the field, so I knew that any of the big time players, I was either going to have to throw it all out on one person, and I saw very quickly what some of these prices were, and I'm like, eh, I'm just not getting one of those big names. So I'll go after a couple of the, you know, as they would go in normal drafts, end of the second, third round type players.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah.
That I'm a little higher on. I'll get them at what I consider is a value. Mm-hmm. I'll sit on them, and I'll sit on the rest of my cash. And I'll either be a power player when it comes to in-season waivers, because I'll be able to bid up a guy that all of a sudden gets an opportunity people didn't see coming, or I'll be number two to you, Doug, apparently, in next year's rookie draft.
Well, and, you know,
I'll be the guy bidding you up for all the guys you want, and eventually I'll run out of money. So
probably, you know, I traded away. One of the reasons I took over this team is because I had Antonio Brown, and I love AB, mm-hmm. and I've had him in a couple other spots, and I traded him because I'm like, you know what? I'm not a win-now team. He's 30 years old. I can still get premium for him. So I traded Antonio Brown away. I got Sammy Watkins back in about $350. So I thought I made out pretty good in that deal, all things considered. So I'm happy with it. But, you know, it's just one of those things in an auction. So, Josh, the auction that we're in is you're either live in person or some people, you know, teleconference in that can't make it. So I want to talk about a strategy that's always – that I find is fun – and it's risky at the same time because there's no non-proxy where you're like, I'm going to get stuck with a guy. All right, I got 14 hours to wait it out. So, Josh, is part of your strategy in an auction, you know, say there's a very popular player that's nominated and you throw a bid out there. Are you pushing the envelope to have someone pay up for that player and take the risk of possibly getting stuck with them? Because we put like a 2-minute time clock on these picks.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I do it sometimes just to fuck with people. And it's absolutely amazing.
Oh, the explicit tag. Tyler's going to be mad. Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know this is PG-13.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's all good now.
Yeah, you're good.
We've broken the seal. Let's let him go. Let him fly, boys. So last year's draft, I was I had a teleconference in, as you said. And me and a couple of the other guys that were all video conferencing in were pretty boozed. And we were legitly going around raising our hand and who was going to be the one that was going to bid up. And we were bidding people up on players that we had no interest in. I ended up almost getting caught. My cousin, God, I love him to death.
Was that Terrell Pryor?
Yeah. I ended up bidding him up about $3 million more than I was willing to spend, but I knew he really wanted him. Now, he was in the room with me, and he was right next to me, but he couldn't see my spreadsheet with my evaluation, and I was just kept bidding it and bidding it, and I knew he wanted him. And with, I think, the auctioneer counted down. He's like, going once, going twice, and then he came in with a bid $600,000 over it, and I was like, thank God.
I remember that.
My God. I almost got him. It was like $5 million.
It was, yeah. Because that contract now is over six with the
So absolutely. Inflation. I use it strategically. I do it because it keeps people on their toes. They have no idea what players I want. So absolutely, because I want it to look exactly like the players that I want. And I want it for the players that I want and then for the players that I don't want so that they can't tell if I'm bluffing them or not. So that way there's times that if people get nervous that all of a sudden I'm bidding against them, and they're like, oh crap, here we go, where he's just going to bid me up $2 or $3 million more than I want. They might give up on a player that I'm actually really in the running for just for that sheer fact that they don't know in the back of their mind whether or not that I'm doing it just to drive up the cost. So, but definitely you're right. I mean, you can get punished there and you can get caught with a player that you overpay for the fact that you were trying to drive his value up to punish another owner. Because remember, we're in a salary cap league. So the salary cap doesn't just end when we leave the auction draft. Not only does it hurt them at that particular moment in time, it hurts them an hour down the line in that auction draft. I have more money than they do based on the difference between what they had to actually pay for the player and what they thought they were going to get. And then after the draft, we have to pay for waiver wire pickups, and those players cost money. And if I'm all of a sudden going to be in a playoff game against that player, that money that I made him drive up, that difference could be the difference maker in my ability to get a player off the waiver wire and him not being able to, depending on how he is able to manage his cap throughout the rest of the year. And I'm always of the mindset that I want to put as many variables in the way of other owners to make a mistake. That is how I always play these games. I want to make it so that you have to make 150 right moves in order to make this thing go well, and I only have to make it one time. I want you to have to continually make the right decision over and over and over again, because you're eventually going to make a mistake. And once you do, I'll obviously gain the advantage immediately and then be able to reap the rewards on that multiple times over, whether it's through the draft or whether it's after the draft and through and during the season. So that's how I'm always looking at these kind of things, is I'm trying to always gain an edge everywhere I can.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I like to do in an auction draft like that is I like to nominate players that I have no interest in, because I want to get as much money off the board as possible. Mm. So let's say there's, like, for instance, Julio Jones is a free agent in that league this year because his contract just expired. So when we come nominations, if Julio hasn't been nominated, I know he's probably going to go for, I don't know, 7 to 10 million. We'll throw that out there because he's still a wide receiver one in some people's eyes. Oh, was that hot? So I'll like to try to get as much money out of the room as possible and hope that eventually down the road, when there's a player that I think is a sleeper that I'm going to nominate maybe towards the end of the draft, that people will be in positions where they can't bid on him, or they'll be like, you know what, my roster's tight, I don't have a lot of money, like, I'm not going to try to push Doug up. Because part of the problem is, in that particular league, is you have myself, you have Josh, you have Everett, you have Christopher, who all, you know, write for fantasy football websites or been on podcasts. You know, once you nominate a player, the other guys in the room are like, what does he know? Like, he knows something. Or if I start to bid on a player, that's an instant signal for them to be like, he's on this guy. I need to get that guy too. Because they know that we put the time in and we put the work in to find our guys. Perfect example of that last year. I remember we're like midway through the auction. I'm like, you know, I'm going to throw a name out there, see if it gets any traction. I threw out Kevin Byard from the Tennessee Titans, safety, second year player. I was all on him for IDP. Like, I was like, Byard's my dude. So I throw out a basic nomination of $500,000. It gets bid up. Jokingly, like, back in, I ended up paying $900,000 for him.
That was probably me. I was gonna raise my hand right now. It was probably us, who were on the video conference.
It was Dave Blyler for the most part. All right, yes. Yeah, yeah. So it was back and forth, and it was like, he's just like, $800,000. Like, not even thinking it. He just knew that I wanted him, and he made me pay for it, which is fine because he finished as a top five defensive back in IDP last year.
Humble. So, oh, pat yourself on the back on that
one. And not only that, but I did win that league again last year.
And I would still take Julio Jones as a wide receiver one, considering he finished it last year as well. I'm just going to say that.
Well, in Dynasty, not so much, in my opinion. But okay. That's okay.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, to each his own. I would say that I do it a little bit differently. I agree with you on high-valued players. I try to get them out of the way first because I know money's going to go out the door quickly on them. And so people are going to be less opt to spend again, right? The next time, the next big name player, they're going to be like, oh, crap. I just did $10 million. I don't really want to spend another $10 million. That's $20 million. Crap, I only got $40 million. Right. I do, however, if there's players that I do like that are lesser-known players, I am immediately throwing them out because people are thinking the opposite. They think the first name that's going to come out of somebody's name is Julio Jones or a Mike Evans or Antonio Brown because they're available. And you start throwing out a mid-tier guy, they're immediately already off their game. They're already thinking they're going to bid $10 million. Now they have no idea how to reevaluate
or what the value at that point in the draft is.
They're already lost because they're already on tilt because they already thought it was going to be a high name player that they wouldn't have to worry about anything below probably $6 million. They wouldn't even have to think about it. And they would know this is going to be $6 million and above. So if you can get a guy that's usually going to go for like a million, like you would spend $2 million for them and you throw him out at the base value and you say, okay, $700,000 starting bid, they're probably going to be like, oh, I don't. Why am I wasting my time when Mike Evans is still on the board? Let's just get this one done because that's the only reason I'm here is I want to get Julio Jones or I want to get Antonio Brown. So those times, it's really beneficial to get them out of the way because the rest of the owners don't want to waste their time, especially early on. Like if it's your first turn on, you know, as the auction and you're basically nominating a player for the first time and you're like, yeah, I'm going to nominate and it's just some no-name guy that you really are looking for that's like even a defensive player, They are just going to let it slide probably at the bare minimum because they just want to get it over with. They don't even want to bother with
it. They want to get onto the bigger
fish. And they want to get to the bigger fish, and they want to be able to know what their cap's going to be after those bigger fish. That's the big thing, is they want to know how much money am I going to have after these big guys go, because that's what I'm saving it up for.
Yeah. So let's move the conversation forward a little bit, and let's talk about that redraft and dynasty mindset and how to compete in both. I'll give you like an overarching thing for me before Josh kind of really gets us into it. So the thing for me is that I struggle with is, you know, dynasty and redraft, very different animals, but a part of it is how do you manage that many teams? So if you could speak to that a little bit as you go over here, you know, just what is your mindset? You have dynasty is year round and then redraft comes around. How do you play both at the same time? And you do well in both your dynasty leagues and your redraft leagues. So you have experience in both of these formats and you do very well in both of them. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, walk me through that process. What does it look like? How does your mindset change at different times of the season? You know, does any one or the other suffer? Are you in so many leagues that you're like, oh man, I forgot to check the waiver wire in that league, you know, as some of the speed bumps that you might have. So talk to me about that dynasty plus redraft mindset.
Sure. And Tim, obviously jump in here too, because you play redraft as well. I mean, you just talked about your home league at the beginning of the pod. I think for me, it's all about having a structured approach across all of your leagues. I think if you want to be a good fantasy football player, you best be committed and be structured in your weekly activities. So I have a very structured approach when it comes to my prep for my drafts, whether it's dynasty or whether it's redraft. I'm very structured in the way that I go into my rookie drafts and who I want to target and who I want. And those are completely different formats because I'm only having to draft four rounds and I'm only going over a collection of players that are just rookies only. So I'm not too worried about the way that the draft unfolds unless there's a player that has glaring value that I really want to go after. And then I'll try to attack and try to get that player. So for Dynasty, I'm very committed. I talked about my spreadsheet. I'm 365 days inside of that and I'm always evaluating all the other owners. I'm always looking at from a bird's eye view of all the owners, all the other owners, every single transaction they make. And more importantly, because I play in a lot of salary cap leagues, what is the amount of money that they have available to them? And what is the historic price for the players that are going to be coming up in the auction draft? So I can start to get a baseline understanding of, okay, if player X goes for his historical value based on similar or like production from other players, then owner A is going to have to spend that much, which then means they only have how much left in their cap. And I'm always trying to kind of keep those things in mind so I can start to know if they take two players in this auction draft, they can't take anybody else. And then I know I can attack on all the other guys that I want. And I can start to try to eliminate owners one at a time and start to know that it's much easier when you're only having to face one person than when you're having to face 11 people in an auction draft. And so I try to eliminate those kind of things and keep it very structured in the way that I'm looking at my dynasty league and the other owners. So that way I don't have to really try to focus on the whole entire league. I can just focus on one owner at a time. And I'm always trying to keep it that way because it just makes it easier for me to understand the league and understand where everybody is from a roster and from a salary. For redraft, I'm very strategic from July to August in my prep. I do about 50 to 75 mock drafts. I'm always evaluating, especially in my keeper leagues that I'm in. I want to know who I think everybody's keeper is going to be. I want to know what my keeper strategy is going to be based on how I think the board's going to fall. Like what rookies came in that year? What's the position of need for most of the other owners? If everybody's going running back, and I have a question mark at my second running back, but I have two stud wide receivers, well, I'm going to be more confident in keeping a wide receiver knowing that, yes, a lot of running backs have been kept. But that means when it comes to my draft spot, I'm going to probably have a running back that's going to fall to me because everybody else is going to have to go wide receiver with their first pick because they've already secured two running backs. So I'm always trying to analyze that based on where I am within the draft and based on what the other owners are coming to the table with already. And then I think the biggest thing in the redraft world is understanding the positional needs of the other owners by taking that big board approach and saying, okay, we all like that QB late approach. But you can go QB late when everybody else has drafted a QB eight rounds in just from the sheer fact that they have a different color on the board. We all do the boards and the stickers. They're going to be a red mark on everybody's team, and you're going to look and you're going to go, okay, Doug doesn't have one and I don't have one. And we're drafting five rounds apart, and I'm going to know where my guy is that I want, and I'm going to make sure that on the turn I draft him because I know that that's the time I'm going to be able to get him. Because if I let him slide past me, Doug will probably get him because he's the only other guy who needs a quarterback. And this is the last guy that presents QB1 value before we start to get into the guys that are questionable players of whether or not they're going to hit that year. And so I'm always trying to analyze the board, and I'll go, okay, well, if I don't need a quarterback, I'll just not even look at that position on my chart at all. I just don't even bother looking at it. We're going to start drafting wide receivers and running backs like crazy, build as many of them up in my stable as backups. So that way I know I have a whole bench of running backs and wide receivers I can either trade, or if injury happens, I'm going to be able to insert a starter right away. So that's kind of my approach through the draft, is always trying to analyze it that way. Tight ends, defense, kickers, if you have them in your league, QBs, those are always one positional need. So the moment they get drafted, you knock that owner off your list. You don't have to worry about them anymore. Don't even bother. And if they want to take another tight end later in the draft, kudos to them. I'm going to take a wide receiver, or I'm going to take a running back, right? There's no need for me to take two. I only can start one. And even if it's a super flex, or you have one of those super flex, you're not starting a tight end over those other positions anyway. So if it's not a tight end premium league. So those are my thoughts. I mean, do you agree, Tim? Are you in that same kind of mindset? Are you analyzing it that way too? Or
yeah,
am I
yeah,
just crazy
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and fucking ridiculous?
No.
Oh, Jesus, I swear again.
Double F-bombs. Oh, man.
Put the R rate on this one. Explicit language.
No, Josh, you're dead on. You're dead on, especially with the, especially when you got that live draft. And, you know, I just keep picturing the Buffalo Wild Wings draft board sitting on the wall with all the stickers on it. The quarterbacks stand out. The tight ends stand out. You know, you can tell what other teams in the league are thinking, what they're trying to do. You could see if somebody's going zero RB, if somebody's just loading up on RBs earlier.
That's that Neo Matrix joint I'm talking about.
You know, we sit there, you look at the board, and you're like, oh, Doug's hit three straight running backs, rounds 1, 2, 3. Here comes his wide receiver run. So, we're coming to the end of the third round here. Before we make this turn, I might as well take my wide receiver I want, because I know for sure it's not going past Doug. Doug's going to take those wide receivers coming up with the next couple picks. So if I want wide receiver, I better hit it now. Doug hit the nail on the head earlier when he said all the work dynasty players do, from the film watching of rookies to, you know, the time spent on where these assets are going in the NFL draft, what it means for them for their dynasty values, into the rookie drafts, into then startup season. By the time redraft season gets here, I have such a good understanding of what this new class of player is and what their value is. Based off of what my redraft mentality was from last year, I insert that rookie class right in there where I feel they should be, and I go ahead and get in there. These days, I spoke about my league of record, 14 years running. We transitioned that from a redraft into Dynasty years ago now. So I don't have like a home league that is still redraft. I talk to guys at work. I get a couple redrafts going here and there through some work buddies. But honestly, it'll be redraft season. We're coming up on the on the NFL season. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to jump on ESPN. I'm going to jump on Yahoo, and I'm just going to join a public league just to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to just test my mettle against whoever's out there. Yep. And I just find it fun. I find different scoring formats, setups, and I just jump in these drafts, hammer a couple of them out, and they're just, it's something extra to have.
I think you're going to, oh, sorry, Doug.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that, you know, from a dynasty football is the niche of fantasy football. You know, there's tens of millions of people that play redraft, where you probably get 5% of that play dynasty, you know. So it's, and it is growing, because I think that the appeal of dynasty fantasy football is better than redraft. Redraft is for your casual gamer, and dynasty is for your hardcore. And I think that more of those casual gamers are turning into that hardcore Dynasty player, which is great to see. Dynasty's growing. I mean, there's a ton of podcasts, ton of websites. You know, there's Dynasty rankings on major websites now like ESPN, and you have all these big people talking about it. So, you know, my biggest thing, you know, with the way that my setup in my mind is, like you said, Tim, is evaluating those players through the process. When you're in redraft, you know who those sleepers are going to be, because a Nick Chubb might not get drafted until round 10 in a redraft league. And you're like, man, Carlos Hyde, he could get, you know, he could get Adrian Peterson. Like, who knows? Maybe Nick Chubb blows up and they're like, you know what, Carlos Hyde, it's, we trade you. And Nick Chubb's the guy. And you drafted him in the 10th round. These are the kind of things that you can see happening that the average redraft person can't, because they haven't put in the work on the actual player themselves. Like, I think we all know that Nick Chubb is a better player than Carlos Hyde. And I like Carlos Hyde. But, you know, he's on a one-year deal and things could go sideways in Cleveland. And, you know, the dynasty guy in a redraft league is going to take that shot at Nick Chubb, where the casual redraft guy will be like, ah, it's Carlos Hyde's job and Duke Johnson's there. Nick Chubb is third on the depth chart. I'm not even going to touch him. And that's what wins you redraft leagues, is having that dynasty mindset, or at least I wouldn't say mindset, but, you know, having that work that's been done and having that knowledge in your brain to be like, hey, this is in the range of outcomes and I'm going to try to take advantage of that. And if you go like 4 to 5 weeks and Carlos Hyde looks good, you know, in redraft, you can drop Nick Chubb and no one's going to pick him up. And then if an injury happens, that's when you get into your waiver wire, which is a lot different than it is in Dynasty, because your Dynasty waiver wire is pretty thin for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to take a lot of things to happen to find a guy on your Dynasty waiver wire that's going to help you win, because the rosters are so much deeper. But in redraft, I know Josh and I, we'd be up at like 5 o'clock in the morning checking our Yahoo email, seeing who got who on waivers, and then jumping on the website and being like, it's a free-for-all. Like, I'm the first guy. Like,
first come, first serve, yeah.
I have an alarm that goes off. I have a problem.
I've been 4:30 in the morning, and I get so mad in Josh's league, because it's our big money league, when the waivers haven't run yet, and I'm like, oh, right, I have to go back to bed for a half an hour. I'm like, oh, man. Yeah. But I always try to get the guy that might have slipped through the waivers, because we're on a fab system. So I always try to get the guy that may have slipped through that other people didn't think of. So it's like, you know, Alvin Kamara won people leagues last year because of waiver wires.
Yep.
You know, David Johnson 2 years ago won people leagues.
Or Alfred Morris 5 years ago, whatever it is now.
Yeah, jeez. All of these have been major impacts in Josh's league that have swung the power of the league.
That's crazy. I think Dynasty, the one thing that Dynasty has done for me, and I'm sure everybody who's listening, is your understanding of teams' depth charts across the league as something that has given me superhuman powers in redraft leagues, honestly. And even in conversations at work around the water cooler, or with people who like to pick my brain from a fantasy perspective because they know I run a fantasy company and I do a podcast, well, first off, our job is to know the NFL, right? That's what we're talking about. Secondly, playing in Dynasty lets you understand how teams are drafting, what draft capital is per the player, what the depth chart looks like, whether it's year one or year three. And you can start to, even people who are playing in casual Yahoo redraft leagues, if you can provide them with knowledge like, yeah, Carlos Hyde's a starter today, but I would definitely look at Nick Chubb after round 12, just like you would have Alvin Kamara last year, because you just don't know what the situation is going to hold. Maybe Carlos Hyde gets traded to a team that loses a running back in the first 2 weeks to an ACL. And then they're like, wow, I wouldn't even have thought of that. Didn't he get drafted not even in the first round, blah, blah, blah. And you start to talk to them about where the second round draft capital really means. Hell, Carlos Hyde was drafted in the second round, and that's the guy you're just talking about is above him. So it's similar. Like, I think your ability to understand the depth charts and understand what draft capital really means, because you have to in Dynasty, really gives you a tremendous advantage in the redraft world, because just people just don't know to look beyond the starters. And sometimes, like, a Trey Burton's waiting in the wings. And we all knew Trey Burton was good. And when the moment Zach Ertz was hurt, I bet you there was more Dynasty owners running to the waiver wire to pick up Trey Burton than there were just casual owners who had no idea who it was until they saw somebody either tweet it or they saw ESPN report it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. And if you don't have a fab system, or if you don't have a waiver wire system in place and it's just a free-for-all, trust me, understanding that depth chart and understanding who those players are comes in extremely handy because you're more intelligent to knowing who they are. You would have known who Trey Burton was and said, holy crap, this guy's going to blow up. I know it. He's got an athletic profile that's going to show it. I know where he was drafted, blah, 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 blah. So yep. Those things are huge.
A couple other things I wanted to add about the redraft mentality is what makes it fun for somebody like me that spends so much time on Dynasty is the guys like the Larry Fitzgeralds, the guys like the Jordy Nelsons, the guys that I've probably moved on from most of my Dynasty teams.
Yep.
I can go out and get them because it's all win now. I can go get that Larry Fitzgerald and get those 100 catches and those, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns he's probably going to grab.
I'll take Tom Brady. Sure.
Yeah, I can love it. I'm being, yeah, come over here, Larry. Come over here, Tom. We're going to go win this league.
Let's do it together. Let's hold hands.
Yeah. And then, like Josh was saying, you got that depth chart knowledge. It's fun. It's exciting. And like Doug said, with Alvin Kamara, I took him 13th, 14th round in a redraft league last year. And by week 8, everybody's like, how did you know? I didn't know, but I knew what this guy was.
You knew what the potential
and
was.
And all it had, just one or two things had to happen. And now look, and it's because of that dynasty work I put in that I'm like, yeah, he's worth this pick in the 13th round. And bam, look what happened 6 weeks later.
Well, you have no idea how many times people talk, and even in the circles that we play in the leagues we play in, we play in a pretty heavy, competitive, big money league where everybody knows their stuff, regardless of whether or not they go on podcast or write for it. They know how to play fantasy football. And even Devin Funchess last year was a major conversation point about why anybody would have picked him up waiver wire wise. And he ended up going off and producing once Calvin Benjamin got traded. And I know for a fact that the owner who got him based on knowledge from his dynasty research and listening and understanding how the depth chart worked and kind of understanding more around his athletic profile, where the limitations were, why there wasn't the production to go around the athletic profile. And then when the opportunity share presented itself, they knew to kind of jump aboard that, knowing that all of a sudden they were going to excel based on the increased opportunity. So even sometimes people who are very knowledgeable within the redraft but don't kind of take it as seriously as dynasty can still sometimes have blinders on and just cannot see past players that have had multiple years of low production and just don't understand the other factors that are going into it. Mm-hmm. And aren't looking at, okay, things have changed now. You know, there's been some changes. There's been some trades. There's been some free agents that have moved. Opportunity value has now changed. So now you have to start to look at this player differently. And that's a huge thing that I still see from the players that I play with.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, one of the biggest advantages in your redraft season is making sure that you have the Sit or Start Fantasy app on your phone or on your website. Because when you want to know who to start, you go on sitterstart.net. You have it on your Google Play store. You have it on your iTunes store. And you say, oh, you know what? I got a wide receiver 3 and a 4. I don't know who to start this week. Should I start Amari Cooper or Larry Fitzgerald? What do the matchups tell me? There's all sorts of – everyone's all over the place. Well, you can go on SitterStart, and 70% of the time, it's right every time. So make sure you download that SitterStart app. They are the proud sponsors of the Dynasty Happy Hour. So make sure you support them. And support us, because you know what? Go to the website, dynastyhappyhour.com. We've got all the goodies. We've got some updated rankings. I finally did mine. There's been some controversy. It's okay. It's my rankings. It's how I feel, and that's what they're all about. I don't go with the consensus. I go with my gut and my head and all that jazz. So make sure you check that out. I do want to give a big shout out to Josh. So Josh, what are you working on? What are you plugging? Talk to me.
Sure. So obviously, Doug and I, we record the Trophy Time podcast every Wednesday night when I can show up on a Wednesday night, and sometimes on a Thursday. But in the off season, we're a little lax on our recording time frame. But as Doug mentioned at the beginning here, so tffgurus.com is the website that I run. Primarily, it's a redraft podcast and website. So during the season, we come up with articles, 5 articles a week, as well as 2 podcasts a week that are going through the entire slate of NFL games, getting you prepped to set your lineups, as well as talking you through all of the waiver wire pickups, all the top starts in DFS, all the top starts for just your traditional lineups, as well as your IDP. So we pay tribute to all the IDP kind of nerds out there that are needing to set up those IDP lineups. So we have 2 IDP articles that drop, one before the Thursday night game and then another one for the weekend game. So we pretty much give you every base covered from the redraft slash DFS side of things during the season. And then in the off season, Doug and I talk a lot about Dynasty. And so our Trophy Time podcast can be found on all the major podcast outlets. You can follow us at TFF Gurus. You can follow the Trophy Time Pod at Trophy Time Pod. You can follow me at Trotta23. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. We do a live Facebook and a live Periscope every single weekend from like a sit or start kind of perspective to get you guys all set up to set your lineups. And we're always dropping a podcast every single week from here on out all the way through the entire season. That's going to be Dynasty related, and then we're going to shift our focus around July as we start to drop our top 10 articles and go towards the redraft community.
Absolutely. Well said. Check out that podcast. It also has an awesome host, so you should probably check that out. It's me. So that is going to wrap up Dynasty Happy Hour this week. We might have Tyler back next week. We still haven't decided. I know that I'll be here, and I know that Tim will be here. So we'll see what happens. I would say stay tuned. We may have some breaking news next week. And until next time, make sure you follow all the things that we talk about. You check us out. You support us. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on the Dynasty Happy Hour.
That's all the time we have for Dynasty Happy Hour. If you're looking for more fantasy football advice, be sure and follow the guys on Twitter. Doug at DaFantasyFather, Tim at DHH_Tim, Tyler at DHH_Tyler. Check out DynastyHappyHour.com for rankings, articles, ADP, shirts, and so much more. Need a question answered on the show? Hit the guys up on Twitter at DynastyHHPod, on the contact link on the site, or by email. DHH at DynastyHappyHour.com. Music is brought to you by the Fantasy Hitman, Mike Wright. We'll catch you back here next time for the Dynasty Happy Hour.